Hello and welcome to Buffalo Who Knew, a podcast series that focuses on the often underappreciated, underrecognized assets of Buffalo as they relate to the built environmental and cultural ecosystem here. So we're super excited today. We're joined by Libby Otto, Christina Maletti, and of course Newell Nussbaumer, and we are here today to talk about an event that's approaching that is, I think, fairly unique to the Buffalo market, but it's called the Buffalo Humanities Festival. So welcome.
Thank you, Fritz. Thanks for having us.
We're really glad that you're here and look forward to sort of drilling down on what is this festival? How did it come about? What makes it special? Why should people know about it? And of course, it is coming next weekend, right?
So it's coming weekend, Friday and Saturday. Should I give you the layout of it?
Would love it.
Okay. So Friday, we kick off at 7 p.m. at Babeville with our spotlight speaker, who is Percival Everett, author of James, which is a retelling of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And so that's really our big feature kickoff on Friday. And then Saturday all day is at the Central Library downtown from 9:30 to the afternoon with speakers from mostly local speakers from Buffalo, where we bring together faculty from UB, but also our partners at Buff State, Canisius University, and Niagara University, mm-hmm. as well as other local partners, just to really speak to our theme, which this year is hauntings.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, we'll circle back around the thematic approach to the conference each year. But tell us more. How did this come about? When did Buffalo's Humanity Festival launch? Who launched it?
So it's really exciting because this is the 10th year of it. And I was executive director 10 years ago. Eric Seaman, who's in the history department, was the director. And he was really the one who came up with this idea. Although I have to say, I was like, yes. So we've been doing this for 10 years. The very first festival was called Migration Nation Movies, Moving Stories. And we had Gary Steingard as our spotlight speaker. And we've done a bunch of different themes since then. We've looked at gender, Renaissance, a lot of different themes that just bring together a range of voices with cool ideas to be in conversation with each other.
And is that the mission? Is the mission to really elevate certain concepts that more people, you want more people thinking about, talking about, sort of looking at from different angles? Or what is the central mission of the Humanities Festival?
It's really to celebrate the humanities. You know, it's, we've been seeing now for a couple of decades, the humanities getting a really bad rap that is actually not deserved. So yay for STEM. We're excited about STEM. But what's happened is that college admissions counselors, for example, or, friends of the family will often tell young people or give young people the impression that it's self-indulgent to major in English, for example, or, you know, that it's navel-gazing to get a gender studies degree. When in fact, what we see is that statistically speaking, people go on to live really healthy and rich lives. We also found evidence that will surprise you with at the end that people do better on standardized tests when they've got a humanities degree. So, you know, they're practical degrees, but it's also just fun to bring people together to talk about exciting ideas and learn new things.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, and I look forward to your data point later on in the program. But, you know, I would think that it would only enhance, you know, the interdisciplinary learning to bring in the humanities to the, you know, engineering, mathematics, business.
I mean, we see that with our students all the time, that students will say to us, this is the first interesting class I've had, you know, and they're seniors. But the festival is really geared for the public. So, you know, we also see that, like, you know, my GP doctor was like, you know, I was a music major once. And so it's a place for anyone to just come and hear an interesting talk, ask questions about it. It's pitched so that, you know, everybody can understand it. It's kind of a little NPR-ish, but in a longer format where you can really learn about, you know, the book that somebody spent years researching, or, you know, other projects that they have going on that they're excited about, art projects, theater projects, all kinds of things.
Part of our hope is to undo the town gown, you know, hierarchy, as it were, which is not, there are no ivory towers. I think everyone that I know in the humanities are just working hard, reading a lot, and just thinking about solving problems that we identify. And so it's really great to have a coalition of universities working together. Everyone has a representative and they come out and we share our work. And our hope is to also have like public scholars, which we do, always on our schedule so that everyone can enjoy the work. It's not difficult to understand what's happening. It's designed for public consumption.
Are these scholars, are they all local, like regional to Buffalo?
Yes.
Or are they?
Yeah.
Okay, so
it's
it
all
is.
All people you know, if you have the time to get to know them.
Yeah.
Scholars don't tend to talk to me, but okay.
Maybe after this they will.
They don't know what they're missing.
That's right.
So great. So you're both with the University of Buffalo. Christina, you're with the English department. Libby, you're with art history.
I'm an art historian, but I'm in global gender and sexuality studies.
Thank you. Yeah, I did know that actually. So talk to us. So this is UB-led. And so you're bringing other local universities to the table. I'm really interested in the nature of that collaboration because I find sometimes that Buffalo can be very siloed. So how is that coming about?
Well, we're hoping to undo the silo. I mean, even UB is siloed internally. Obviously, the silo in particular is Buffalo's metaphor. it's visual as well as a systemic structure, I suppose. I think the idea, I mean, Libby was around when the Humanities Festival was designed. I mean, I think the idea is to bring the universities together so faculty, both within University of Buffalo, but with other universities in town, can get to know each other and their work better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wonderful. I think the idea of the silos comes up because people are just busy. So, they're doing their research, they teach their classes, and they don't end up necessarily crossing paths. And we found through the steering committee for the festival that it's been great because we now have friends who are professors at Canisius, Buff State. Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew people anyway, but it deepens those relationships. You have things to talk about together, and it's really rich. The other thing is that the Humanities Institute is the biggest humanities-focused institution in all of Western New York. So we have resources in order to help stage this. You know, we have our amazing staff member, Maki Tanigaki, who has great connections and just really helps us realize all of this. And we have wonderful colleagues who know their colleagues who might have a good talk and have great ideas, but don't necessarily have the resources we have. So we kind of host the party, but everybody brings something to the table.
Yeah. We're trying to create community.
So 10 years ago, when this really got off the ground, what was that like, getting something like a project like this off the ground?
It was a lot, in part because we did a lot of fundraising initially. We raised $55,000 every year. The Oshai Foundation was great at giving us a 3-year seed money grant. We had some other sponsors. Over time, UB has kind of stepped up to fill that gap. So that's been really helpful that we don't have to put quite as much shoe leather into things. As much as we love to reach out to sponsors, it just takes a lot of time. And we got a lot of no's too. So, but the other thing I'd say that's changed is initially we still want it to be a festival, but we had things like, you know, free yoga outside or like make some photos in a tent, and people really just wanted to go to the talks. So it's kind of a slow festival with a lot of conversation. There's food, there's going to be some readings happening at this one. We can talk more about the format of it. There's the outside stuff. We just, people weren't going. They wanted to hear all the talks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we should say one big change from the past to the present is that because it was new, there was a ticket. And now that they had to charge admission, but now we really worked hard so that it's free.
Oh, that's cool.
So anyone can come there's no charge. There's a light lunch, I'll call it. And so it's a really great place to spend your Saturday. We'll be at the Central Library on Saturday after Percival Everett's talk on Friday at Asbury Hall at Babeville. And you can come for part or for all.
Yeah. Mm. We'd love it if people would register on the website, yeah, just because that helps us get a sense of who's coming and mm-hmm. get people in the door quickly. So people can do that for free at our website, which is buffalohumanitiesfestival.org. But, you know, if you don't get a chance to do that and you want to come, just show up and we'll
let you. That's probably a great way to like read up on the bios and see who's going to be attending. And
yeah.
And that's where the schedule is, to be clear. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did the pandemic affect this festival? I'm just curious.
Well, I was interim director at that point, partly. And we kept it going, but we went outside. So we went down to Silo City, speaking about silos, and they were literally the backdrop for two versions of the festival. And it was a smaller version, but it was successful because people were coming because they wanted something to do during the pandemic. And we had plenty of talks under the willow tree and in the studio, and we made the best of it. Yeah. We wanted to just keep people engaged in thinking about the world around them, even if things were slightly or more than slightly chaotic.
Yeah. Did it change the festival kind of like moving forward, like going through something along those lines?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if it really changed it. I mean, I think times are just keep changing and we just keep responding with different themes and things like that. Is that
right? I mean, I'd say, I guess in two ways, a little bit, although this is true, I think of most things, is I feel like there's a certain joy when people get together because, you know, people really missed that. And when it happens, they realize it can't always happen. And I think also, you know, we try to be cautious and thoughtful and not put people in too tight together just because some people feel uncomfortable with that, rightly so. And, you know, COVID's still
out there.
Still out there.
So I love that you're located this year downtown in what I call, I think, is being recognized as literary district of Buffalo. Sure. You've got the Erie County Library, Western New York Book Arts, you've got Fitz Books, Just Buffalo. So you've got this corridor happening, which, you know, I love to see more of that sort of cohabitation, cross-pollination in Buffalo. I think the more we can do that, all the better. So was this purposeful that you based it there this year?
I think so. We were really trying to become even more civic, as it were, you know, make the festival even more public facing. And so I think when we were trying to find a good space for the different talks, in particular this year, a sort of light bulb went off because Percival Everett's book that he'll be sort of talking about on Friday night, James, is a rewriting, as Libby mentioned, of Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, but from Jim's point of view. Our library, well, Buffalo was, Mark Twain spent some time in Buffalo. It's where he launched his career as a newsman. And the Central Library actually owns a copy of Adventures of Huckleberry Finn that has a really curious provenance. It got lost for a while and they found it in someone's trunk 100 years later or something like that. But in any case, it's there. They have a Mark Twain room and they're going to be giving tours of the Mark Twain room and showing off some of the pages of the manuscript during the festival so people can connect what Percival Everett's doing with some of the history in Buffalo. And one of the first talks at the festival, I think it is on Mark Twain's Haunts in Buffalo by Tom Reigstad, who is a faculty emeritus from Buff State. So he'll have a lot to say about Mark Twain in Buffalo. So we're hoping to connect all that with the Central Library, their history, Buffalo's history, and the people that live here now or are visiting who are giving talks on subjects that are interesting to all of us.
Wonderful. So what sort of audience are you getting from outside the area for this year's event? I mean, and just in terms of numbers and
it's pretty
Buffalo.
Local.
It's Buffalo, mostly.
Yeah. We did. Yeah. We have sometimes, you know, found people that have come from a few hours away and we didn't even know it. But I think it's mostly from the region. Yeah. My parents always come. So they're coming from Vermont.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. But I mean, there's like an enormous age range, you know, at the festival. We have students that are coming, high school students, undergraduates, what we call the NPR crowd. And then, you know, just anyone that's interested in some of the talks that are happening. Like this year, there's a talk on theater, the sort of invisible history of gun violence in theater, I'll call it. There's a talk
starting with Lincoln.
I think Lincoln is in it.
Yeah.
But Annie, get your gun. Yeah, I mean, things that, like, when I heard about this project, I was like, oh, yeah, that is weird. Yeah. You know?
There's a lot. I mean, I should let Libby talk a little bit about the hauntings theme, which kind of arises in some ways out of her work. But the idea is to kind of make visible the invisible. And so that's where the gun violence panel came from. There's a talk called Riding Jane Crow that's based on the book of one of my colleagues in the English department, Miriam Thagart, that's about African-American women on the railroad, you know, kind of in the 19th century or early 20th, overlooked history. We have the Mark Twain, Hauntings of Mark Twain. We have the Irish Classical Theater, some of the folks that have been directing, I think, the last play. Was it the Arthur Miller play? Okay.
Arthur Miller.
So Jewish Identity and some of the work that they, on Arthur Miller's work, amongst other things. Who am I missing?
I'm excited about Jan Liu from the history, UB it's History so Department, good. Who does medical history in China and India in the medieval period. Mm-hmm. And his current project is on smells. Mm-hmm. And
forgotten smells.
Thinking about historical smells, but it's also about trade and aromatics, like frankincense, as they came to China, how they were, and India, how they were integrated into medicine, into food. So this both a very kind of concrete, you can look at recipe books, but an ethereal experience of people, you know, encountering new smells for the first time 700 years ago.
Interesting. So, yeah, I just actually went to a museum show in New York where they...
I saw it too, Sleeping Beauties. Sent Jan the
video.
So
for our audiences, I mean, it's an ability to go through a show and actually get the smells from that era. Mm-hmm. And it was really fascinating.
Sleeping Beauties is in the Costume Institute, and it's about how gowns are kind of alive when it's a living art, when fashion is, when it's on a body, but when it comes into the Institute, in a way it dies. So how do we still protect these garments, but while making them come alive? And the smell of them, you know, say someone's sweat, but also the smell of how a fabric ages.
Rose petals or that were on the, that were, you know, adornment on the...
But can I say, lest I forget, there is a panel also on dementia in Gothic literature, something that's not really looked at very much, and also LGBTQ plus history in Buffalo specifically. So there's like a huge range, and you could just kind of dip into some of these talks and, you know, come out with quite a lot.
There's one more that I'd really like to focus on, which is Eric Gansworth, who is kicking the morning off on Saturday. So it's always, you know, people kind of say they'll come by and they come by in the afternoon. It would be great if people got there at 9:30 for the start. We'll be in the really central space of the Central Library called the Ring of Knowledge. So anyone can wander up to that part. And Eric Gansworth grew up in the Tuscarora Reservation, but he is Onondaga, and wrote a poetic memoir called Apple, Skin to the Core, that was one of the NPR best books of the year. It got a bunch of prizes, and I've just been reading it, and it's such a beautiful, you know, quirky, funny, thoughtful meditation on growing up incredibly poor on the reservation, but, you know, incredibly rich in an interesting but also broken history, and, you know, coming of age as a young queer Native American pop culture obsessed kid. So we're really excited to have him start things off in the morning.
Amazing. So where do you see this festival going? Where in another 10 years, where what does it look like?
Bigger and better. A whole carnival. The Humanities Rides. Carnival.
New smells.
Yes. What is the ride where they drop you from really high and then stop right before you crash? Right.
I don't want to know.
Right. But somehow we integrate Freud.
I don't know. That's a really good question. We should probably
like
talk about
how it is. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, I think there's something so great about the festival because we use some of the more major funds we have to bring in somebody big, like Percival Everett, who, you know, he wrote also Erasure, which is behind the film American Fiction that a lot of people have seen that got an Oscar for best adapted screenplay. He's considered like a major get, like on Facebook. Friends at other institutions are
where
like,
it matters.
Yeah, are like, he's bigger than Jesus. How'd you get him to come to Buffalo? So we're so excited to have him here, but then also to use this to introduce people to local talent mm-hmm. and let them know what their mm-hmm. neighbors are thinking mm-hmm. about and writing about mm-hmm. and the stories that really obsess mm-hmm. them that they want to share. So I mean, it's a good format.
It is. And the festival changes every year. So that's funny, like to think about what it's going to be in 10 years is really to think about what it's going to be next year.
Right.
Because every year it's sort of adapted to who's new to Buffalo, who's been here for a long time, whose work has been unrecognized. How can we highlight the really amazing talent that exists here in Buffalo for Buffalonians?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
Great. I'm all about that. Well, so, you know, one last thing I thought it would be interesting to talk about is, and sort of germane to this podcast series is, you know, what's an interesting factoid that you want to convey about this festival that we don't know, or many don't know, would might be a selling point?
Shall I? Sure. So, in our efforts to surprise you, we discovered that 50% of people that go to medical school are actually humanities majors.
Mm.
So, when we think about the STEM sciences versus humanities, it should be really a collaboration because you know, the humanities gives people the way the art of thinking. The art of problem solving, and they take it into whatever field they end up going. Mm. So,
amazing. That's
humanities
sounds...
are good for
it. Yes. And, it, and if you go to the Humanities Festival, you will come out 100% better person.
Yeah. Right.
Sign me up. Sign me up. All right. Well, thank you both so much for coming and sharing about this wonderful festival. I hope some of our audience members will avail themselves of this wonderful opportunity. And kudos to you both and continue on with the great work.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.